Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have a few clouds out there, 43 degrees. We're looking for a 40% chance of rain for the rest of the day. Cloudy skies are called for with a high near 46, northwest wind to 10. For tonight, 40% chance of rain mainly before 1 a.m., mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 36. Northwest winds to 20, gusting as high as 25 tonight and as high as 30 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, details are a little scant about a military test of hypersonic weapons that failed Thursday at the Kodiak Spaceport Complex. The Dixon Glacier is rapidly receding, but that might be good news for the Alaska Energy Authority. And the Kenai City Council is holding off on accepting money from the National Library of Medicine due to wording problems. Those details and more.
NPR's Franco Ordonez reports Biden wants a deal before he leaves the country later this week for a high-profile climate summit that'll put a spotlight on what he has and has not been able to accomplish.
President Biden spoke at a New Jersey transit maintenance facility in the suburbs of Newark. He warned that America was losing its competitive edge, and he said it's time for the United States to invest in itself.
We cannot be competitive in the 21st century global economy if we continue to slide. My wife, who's a community college professor, says any nation that out-educates us will out-compete us.
Democrats continue to wrestle over the size and scope of the spending package. Biden told reporters earlier that he wanted a deal before he leaves Thursday for a G20 leaders conference in Rome. He then heads to a climate summit in Glasgow. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
Police, firefighters, and other city workers chanting "Hold the line" outside Chicago City Hall this morning, protesting COVID-19 vaccine mandates for employees to get their shots or risk losing their jobs. But city leaders say vaccinations are saving lives. There were mass protests in Sudan. Thousands took to the streets of the capital and elsewhere to protest the military coup overnight. Clashes with security forces turned deadly. Without the presence of a civilian government, the U.S. is suspending $700 million in emergency aid to the African nation. NPR's Ada Peralta says today's uprising is reminiscent of protests more than 2 years ago.
Back in the spring of 2019, huge popular protests led to a military coup that ousted longtime leader Omar al-Bashir. The military sided with street protesters who demanded a democratic Sudan, and they agreed that after a certain time period, they would cede power to civilians. Now, after months of tensions between the country's military and its civilian leaders, the military has taken full power.
NPR's Ada Peralta reporting. Microsoft warns of a new Russian spying operation. NPR's Jenna McLaughlin with details.
Behind the latest operation is the same group that stealthily compromised IT monitoring software made by tech company SolarWinds last winter when they hacked thousands of companies and a handful of government agencies. But this time, Microsoft says the Russian intelligence officers used less sophisticated techniques and were less successful compromising their targets. The company says since May, they have notified more than 140 companies of hacking attempts, but only believe as many as 14 were successful. Experts say this kind of spying is typical, and going after technology companies in the supply chain is the new norm. Jenna McLaughlin, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
A military test related to the development of hypersonic weapons failed Thursday at the Kodiak Spaceport Complex, according to the Department of Defense. It is unclear if the failure caused any damage to the launch complex. Alaska Aerospace, the operator of the launch complex, did not respond to a request for comment. A Kodiak Island resident posted a video purportedly showing the rocket streaking into the sky at about 2 a.m. on Thursday. The complex is about 20 miles from the city of Kodiak. It has served as a testing and launching center for the public and private sector for over 20 years. In a written statement, Pentagon spokesperson Lieutenant Commander Tim Gorman of the United States Navy said the test was a data collection experiment related to the development of a hypersonic weapon. Military analysts say prototypes are designed to hit a target thousands of miles away at up to 5 times the speed of sound. Gorman said the test on Kodiak failed due to an issue with the booster rocket system. This test comes less than a week after China reportedly conducted a successful test of their own hypersonic weapon system, which could deliver a nuclear payload with greater maneuverability than an intercontinental ballistic missile. An aborted military test related to the development of a hypersonic weapon at the Kodiak Spaceport Complex in 2014 caused significant damage to the launch facility. The Dixon Glacier, on the other side of Kachemak Bay from Fitz Creek, is rapidly receding. That's true for glaciers around Alaska and the world. But what's special about Dixon is it sits just a few miles from Bradley Lake, a source of hydropower that supplies the rail belt with about 10% of its energy needs. As the glacier keeps retreating, the Alaska Energy Authority, which owns the project, says it can expand the project's capacity using the new water coming off the glacier.
Brentwood Higman is a geologist based in Seldovia, not far from the glacier.
If you're talking in terms of geologic timescales, it's definitely rapidly retreating. I mean, it's something that if you went and visited the glacier 2 years in a row and stood right next to it, it'd be pretty obvious that it was different.
Dixon Glacier has receded enough in the last 5 years so that there's now an exposed stream on state land. It's appealing to the Alaska Energy Authority, which has been eyeing ways to expand the 120-megawatt Bradley Lake project. Bradley Lake is the largest hydroelectric facility in Alaska, and it sends powers to utilities across the rail belt. Its power is also cheaper than other sources, at 4 cents per kilowatt hour. Alaska Energy Authority Executive Director Curtis Thayer says diverting water from Dixon could bolster the project's capacity by 50%.
If Bradley can produce, now it produces 10, but if it produces 15 or 16% of renewable on the rail belt, that's huge.
The corporation recently wrapped up another expansion project, a 3-year effort to divert runoff from Battle Creek into Bradley Lake. That project grew the production capacity of the facility by 10%. Higman says, in a broad sense, energy providers can anticipate changes in the amount of water that becomes available for hydropower projects as glaciers continue to melt. And he says it could be valuable for them to anticipate how that changing landscape might affect their portfolios.
Bradley's already a critical part of our power infrastructure, and it'd be really nice to know how we might expect that to change as we're doing things like developing wind that might be balanced against Bradley.
An Alaska Energy Authority analysis from earlier this year places the Dixon project price tag at $125 million. Thayer says Alaska Energy Authority is considering a few ways to do the project.
We could do it. We could divert it into Bradley Lake, or maybe even do what we call a runner river, where we put a generator on the river that is currently outflowing and create power and ship the power off and let the water still continue to go out into Kachemak Bay.
He says it could be up to a decade before the Alaska Energy Authority brings the glacier project online. By then, there's no telling how much more melted the Dixon Glacier will be. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The Kenai City Council is holding off on accepting money from the National Library of Medicine until the Kenai Library can provide the council with a list of books it plans to get with the grant. The money comes from the National Library of Medicine Region 5, which is run out of the University of Washington and covers several western states. The Kenai Library won $1,500 from the library as part of the Collection Equity Outreach Award, geared toward funding library collections nationwide that will focus on health equity. But at Wednesday's city council meeting, multiple commenters said they were worried about accepting the grant from the feds. Dave Peck of Kenai said he's concerned about the use of the word equity in the award description.
I think equity can create division rather than unity. And I'm wondering if this is enhancing some sort of a federal agenda or requirements that are attached to this money, which would not necessarily represent the views of the people of Kenai or even the city council.
The ordinance says the city will focus on purchasing materials, quote, for underrepresented groups based on census data and informal community conversations, close quote. In her letter to the council, librarian Katya Wolf said health literacy is an important factor in reducing health disparities. She says she plans to buy books on topics including self-care and healthy habits, as well as reference books about Medicare and Medicaid and specific medical conditions like cancer. Council member Tia Winger said she's concerned about the organization National Institute of Health, run by the federal government.
When I looked into the network of the National Library of Medicine, their content that they put out isn't anything within reference of the items that we would be carrying. So all their content was based off of COVID, getting the vaccine, without getting too in-depth. Everything that they had posted was really COVID-related.
City Manager Paul Ostrander said decisions about books are left to the discretion of the librarian.
I wanted you to know that there's already every year over $60,000 worth of books that she purchases. And I do think that looking at each one of those title by title and determining which are or are not appropriate is a very slippery slope that we need to be careful of.
Council member Henry Naxted says he's checked out books from the library that were previously banned from schools and libraries.
I would be cautious about anybody finding a title that they question and kind of reject because of a perception, kind of like Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer or any one of those, and it's kind of a slippery slope to go on.
The council agreed to postpone the ordinance until the first meeting of November, until the library can The council agreed to postpone the ordinance until the first meeting of November, until such time as the library can come up with a list of titles she will buy with the grant. Fairbanks Memorial Hospital has set up a mobile morgue in the parking lot to prepare for any mass casualty event. As KUAC's Robin reports, the refrigerator container is not running yet, but could be ready in 2 hours' time.
Foundation Health Partners used federal COVID grant money to buy a mobile refrigeration unit. It's been sitting ready in the south lot of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital since last December.
When we saw the surge with the Delta variant, we decided it was time to exercise that surge morgue capacity and make sure that if we needed it, we had moved it in place. We were able to power it appropriately and just make sure that the teams knew how to use it if we ever needed it.
Keith Fair, Director of Emergency Management for Foundation Health Partners, says it's a refrigerated Connex container. It looks like a standard storage container. He says the hospital moved it close to the building to get ahead of the snow.
We moved it in September into place and put a portable generator on it to make sure that it would work and did a systems check on it and spent time training our team so that they knew how to stand it up in a very short amount of time if it was necessary.
So far, it hasn't been necessary. The FMH morgue can hold 4 bodies and hasn't needed more capacity.
To my knowledge, the morgue capacity has never been overwhelmed at the hospital. We have a great relationship with our mortuary partners, and they come in and move the bodies out of the morgue and have been very timely about that.
The surge morgue can be fully functional within 2 hours and can hold 6 to 8 bodies.
Currently, we've got stretchers in place inside so that the bodies are treated appropriately. But with new grant funding that's coming, we'll be purchasing some racking that will allow us to appropriately treat up to 16 in that space.
Fear says the extra morgue capacity has been on a to-do list since a regulatory agency suggested it for the hospital in 2008. Regional hospitals are supposed to be prepared for mass casualty events like a chemical leak or a plane crash. And Fear says, because it's a federal asset, it can be shared with local emergency services at the site of an accident to quickly help with appropriate care. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The federal government has filed another draft environmental impact statement for a federal oil and gas lease sale in Cook Inlet and is asking for comments from the public. It's the second time in less than a year that the feds have put out an environmental review on a potential Cook Inlet sale since the Biden administration halted the process leading up to the auction earlier this year. That pause was part of a larger executive order aimed at fighting climate change. The leasing process resumed this summer when a Louisiana District Court judge ordered programs to resume in Cook Inlet and the Gulf of Mexico following a lawsuit from Alaska and several other states. The states argued that the Biden administration's decision was bad for economic development and that the feds bypassed the public process when they hit pause on the sales. The potential auction includes 224 blocks across 1 million acres in Cook Inlet from the southern end of Calgon Island down to Augustine Island. The department can still decide to cancel a lease sale after an environmental impact statement is filed. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which oversees the offshore leasing program, canceled sales in 2006, 2008, and 2010 in Cook Inlet due to a lack of industry interest. BOEM is accepting public comments on its environmental impact statement starting October 29th, and it's going through December 13th. The department is also holding three virtual public hearings next month. Beginning January 1st, Alaska drivers will generally be able to legally operate all-terrain vehicles on lower-speed public roads. The practice has long been common in rural communities, but as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, some officials in larger cities have safety concerns about off-road machines mixing with cars and trucks on roadways.
The change instituted by the Dunleavy administration generally legalizes driving ATVs on public roads with 45 mile per hour or less speed limits statewide. It also regulates on-road operation of the category of machines defined as all-purpose vehicles or APVs.
Well, the way we define an all-purpose vehicle is any self-propelled device that is on wheels or tracks that come in contact with the ground. So these common all-purpose vehicles may be a four-wheeler, an all-terrain vehicle or ATV, a utility terrain vehicle or UTVs, or side-by-sides.
Department of Public Safety spokesperson Austin McDaniel says the category does not include snow machines as earlier proposed, and the finalized regulations include several safeguards.
You will have to be a licensed driver. Your all-purpose vehicle will need to have a standard motor vehicle registration. It will need to have front and rear license plates affixed to it, and the operator will need to have motor vehicle liability insurance.
McDaniel also notes that local governments with the power to do so can opt out by passing laws banning use of APVs on roads within their boundaries. Both the Fairbanks City Council and the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly passed resolutions opposing the initial broader proposal last spring, and local police and transportation officials pointed to the potential danger of mixing off-highway vehicles with cars and trucks on roads.
It's a pretty big issue because a lot of folks own these machines.
City of Fairbanks Mayor Jim Matherly says he doesn't think it's a good idea to allow APVs on urban area roads.
I mean, we get complaints now about four-wheelers in neighborhoods, and we just don't have the manpower, the police power, to go out and check them all out. We just don't. Then if they're legalized, look out. It's just going to be incredibly hard to manage.
Mayor Matherly says ordinances to regulate APV use in the city are already in the works.
Now, if the city decides to ban it, that puts us kind of an island in the middle of the borough.
The borough is still in a position of not having the powers to make regulations.
Borough Assembly Presiding Officer Mindy O'Neill notes that like other second-class boroughs in the state, the Fairbanks North Star Borough does not have the authority to regulate vehicle use.
So I'm concerned about safety, like many other people have expressed in what our resolution said.
I think if it's administered properly, you're not going to see this bloodbath in the streets that some of the people are talking about.
Local ATV dealer Craig Compo points to the licensing, insurance, and equipment requirements in the new Alaska regulations.
There's 11 states in the United States that have some pretty common sense laws. We actually reached out to law enforcement in Montana, in certain cities of Montana and Idaho, and they haven't got the problems that some people are claiming.
Compo says APVs don't belong on urban roads, but he suspects most use in the borough will be on more rural roadways. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Robotic crab cutters score a U.S. patent. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
Radio Canada reports that robotic machines that cut and shuck crab have nabbed a U.S. patent, and it's being hailed as a breakthrough in fish processing technology worldwide. The system, developed by the Canadian Center for Fisheries Innovation at St. John's, operates at lightning speed at fish plants in eastern Canada. In a chamber about the size of a shipping container, crab goes down a conveyor belt where it's analyzed by cameras. Then, so-called pick-and-place robots saw off the legs, sort and package them, and off they go. Other robots shuck the meat from the crab instead of sending that job to China.
Instead of sending our crab out as sections with the meat in the shell, we thought we could attract a higher price if we sold the meat instead.
Bob Verge is the brains behind the crab robots and managing director at CCFI. While the crab-cutting robots are designed for snow crab, Verge said the machine is adaptable to other crab species. He added that interest is high, including from international markets, who are interested in developing robotic solutions to other fish production problems. The center has applied for patents in 10 other countries, and those are expected to be issued soon. The robot makers are hoping the system will help solve workforce problems in fish plants that often are located in remote regions where it's tough to recruit enough workers. In this case, Verge says humans will work on more highly skilled machines and computers and not on the slime line cutting up crab.
If we are going to attract the young people we need, I think we need to create better jobs, not more jobs.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 25th day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:08. It will set again at 6:38. That will give us 9 hours and 30 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 47 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 56. That was set in 1918. And our record low is 17, set in 1935. Currently a rather pleasant 43 degrees, a few clouds out there, 40% chance of rain for today and tonight. Northwest winds to 20 will increase to 25 tonight. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 4:51 this afternoon. That will be an 8.6-foot tide here on the east side, followed by a low tide at 11:44 of 8/10 of a foot. Our next high tide will be at 6:21 tomorrow morning. That will be a 6.2-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 11:22 tomorrow morning of 4 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 5:19 p.m. That will be a 13.2-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide right after 12 noon, 12:06, or right after midnight, 12:06 a.m. of 9/10 of a foot. Your next high tide will be 6:31 tomorrow morning, 10.6 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:50 a.m. of 5.6 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, we do have a small craft advisory for tonight and Wednesday for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. East wind 15 knots, except north 20 knots north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, northwest 30, seas to 5 feet, building to 12 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow on our east side, northwest 30, seas to 13 feet. Tuesday night, northwest 35, seas to 11. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning tonight and Tuesday. Northeast 20 and seas to 4 feet. For tonight, northwest 25, increasing to 35 knots, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, northwest 40, seas to 9 feet. That's expected to continue tomorrow night. And for Wednesday, south 15, seas coming down to 5 feet in the Shelikof. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board is holding a meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 12 p.m. in the Baranoff Park office. That's at 1222 Chichinoff Street. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, call the Parks and Rec office at 486-8670. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center is having their annual membership meeting tomorrow as well. That's happening 6 to 7 p.m. over Zoom. Everyone in the community is invited and welcome. Just email them at outreach@kwrcc.org, or you can call them on the phone at 486-6171. The Independent Living Center is having a virtual Halloween event via Zoom for people interested in recreation, leisure activities for those who experience disabilities. Come learn what's possible and tell them what kind of activities you'd like to be a part of. The event is Wednesday, October 27th, this Wednesday, 4 to 5 p.m. Participants are encouraged to wear a Halloween costume. Email for a link and directions. Well, that email address is fairly involved. You probably want to just give them a call at Independent Living Center. That phone number is 907-486-0491. The Kodiak City Council will be having a work session tomorrow. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. In addition, they'll be having their regular council meeting on Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT 100.1 FM, and the meeting will also be web-streamed. The web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you need printed meeting materials or have questions, call the clerk at 486-8636. The Humane Society of Kodiak is having their annual meeting on Thursday. That's happening 5:30 to 7 p.m. via video conference. For more information and a link to the meeting, visit Kodiak Animal Shelter, all one word, kodiakanimalshelter.org. The Kodiak Public Library Association has two openings on their board of directors. Join them and help them continue their mission of providing support for the Kodiak Public Library. The board meets monthly. KPLA is also looking for help constructing bases for several little libraries. They'd like to put these up all around town. Little libraries offer free books for anyone to encourage reading in our community. Please contact them at kpla.alaska@gmail.com, or you can call them at 486-6498 extension 2. Again, that's kplaalaska.alaska@gmail.com or 486-6498. Well, this Saturday is the time to visit the Aleutic Museum and pick up your own copy of their new publication for youth about Aleutic history. The museum will distribute 50 free signed paperback copies of Iksani's Trout Hook, written by Alicia Drabeck and inspired by archaeological finds. This book follows two Aleutic youth at fish camp. Stop by the Museum Gallery at 215 Mission Road between noon and 4 p.m. this Saturday to pick up a signed copy. One book per family, please. Registration is still open for the Kodiak Hockey League youth ice hockey season. Open to girls and boys ages 5 to 18, the season begins soon. New players are welcome and can begin through the KHL Learn to Play program. Visit Kodiak Hockey League, all one word, .org for details.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.